But God's already answered one prayer, and I found that out during our prayer time over here. Tess, lift up your hand, all right? Emmanuel, and all right, stand up. Emmanuel and Tess got engaged over the weekend, so we are so excited for them. We love you guys, and we are so happy to see that. And I was joking with him. Tess had her hand behind Emmanuel, and I saw the ring. But, you know, some people wear rings for different reasons, so I didn't want to, like, throw him under the bus and be like, hey, and then she's like, no, and then, you know, it gets a little awkward. But anyway, we are so happy for you, and you got some friends here that were helped part of the celebration. The family's growing, so we are so happy for you guys and excited for what God is doing and for the next journey as well. So congratulations. And no, I think that's the cool thing about our church is that we can take this time to do the things that we need to do. Now, what I need to do is I need to take my message and I need to go like this, and I'm playing that in my brain. So it might be a little bit choppy. I still believe that there's something for us here today that we need to kind of wrestle with. But I also believe the Holy Spirit can tell me there's some things that don't need to be said as well. So, Haman, you really preached with talking about authority, which is I think where it's at. We've been going through the Gospel of Mark. Last week we didn't talk about it, but last week. In our reading, we talked about Jesus crossing the sea, and there was this storm. And if you didn't get a chance to read that, I encourage you to go back and do that because I think it actually plays into this story. But if what you read when you read Mark, what you know is that this is actually the first time Jesus is going to the Gentiles. This is the first time that Jesus is going to the Gentiles, and the Gentiles are just for Jewish people. They're just they're people that don't follow God. And their perspective, right? And so for us, in our context, it would just be people that don't know Jesus. That's where Jesus is going for the first time. And he crosses the sea, he calms the storm, kind of a big deal, and he does it for one person. He does it for this man who's demon-possessed that we're going to look at this story. And I think it's just pretty instructive that he heals this one guy, and then he goes back over to cross the sea. You remember back in September, we did that prayer series, 21 Days of Prayer, Be the One. And I think it's a reminder for us to, if you have identified your one, how have you been doing in praying for that person? Or you're supposed to be the one for your one. So have you identified that one person that God has called you to pray for, to be in relationship with, to share your faith as appropriate? Now would be a great time to maybe re-engage with that, because sometimes we think we have to save the whole world. We have to reach the whole world for Jesus, but really God's given us one person in our lives, and that's what we see happen here. So let's stand together and let's read Mark chapter 5. We'll have the words on the screen. If you have your Bible or your journal, you can look at here as well. We're reading through the ESV version. It's a little long, but I think there's a lot of detail here that's important. So Mark writes, they came to the other side of the sea, right? This is after Jesus calms the storm, to the country of the Gerasenes. And when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there he met out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. He lived among the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain, for he had often been bound with shackles and chains. But he wrenched the chains apart, and he broke the shackles in pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always crying out, cutting himself with stones. And when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and fell down before him. And crying out with a loud voice, he said, what have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me. For Jesus was saying to him, come out of the man, you unclean spirit. Then it gets a little weird here. Jesus asked, what is your name? And he replied, my name is Legion, for we are many. Bad grammar. And he begged him earnestly, do not send them out of the country. Now a great herd of pigs, it gets even weirder. A great herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside. They begged him, saying, send us to the pigs, let us enter them. So Jesus gave the demons permission. What? And the unclean spirits came out, they entered the pigs and the herd, and numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and drowned in the sea. The herdsmen fled, told it in the city and in the country, and people came to see what it was that had happened. They came to Jesus and saw the demon-possessed man, the one who had the legion, sitting there clothed in his right mind, and they were afraid. And those who had seen it described to them what had happened to the demon-possessed man and to the pigs, and they began to beg Jesus to depart from their region. Don't miss that. And he was getting into the boat. And as Jesus was getting into the boat, right? Okay, he did his job, now he's leaving. The man who had been possessed with demons begged him that he might be with him. We find that in Mark chapter 3 when it says the disciples, Jesus called some that they might be with him. But Jesus did not permit him and said to him, go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you, how he has had mercy on you. And he went away and began to proclaim in the region and how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone marveled. All right, that's our word. You may be seated. I don't know about you, but I have questions. I did not want to preach this week. I was hoping Dan or Jason or Lisa was going to preach this week, but I think they also saw the preaching calendar and said, I don't want to preach this week. And I don't know about you. Like I said, I've got questions in general. Demon possession. What in the world is going on there? I don't fully understand it. How can one man be demonized, but then it sounds like there's a thousand or thousands or many demons that are kind of going through this man or in this man? Why, what's up with the pigs, right? How does this work? Why does Jesus allow this to happen? Why are demons wanting to go into pigs? And then why are they running off into the ocean? What happens next? Do they die? Do they like go in the sea and then like, fish are now demon-possessed? Like, I don't know what's going on. And I'm not going to answer because I don't know. But I think the disciples had a lot of these similar questions because this did not happen every day in Palestine. I mean, there were more spiritual things that were taking place, but not something like this. And I think Mark had questions as well. But here's the thing. The Bible doesn't attempt to answer those questions for us. So we're not going to focus necessarily on that. We're going to refocus on what was reported by Mark. Now, I mentioned this is a long passage that Mark wrote. It's actually recorded in Matthew and Luke, so it's all three of the synoptic gospels include this story. To the best of my knowledge, it's the only story where Mark is the longest. Remember we talked about Mark? Mark is fast-paced. Mark is go, go, go. Just get the details out, move on. Well, in this particular story, it's longer than Matthew or Luke. And so Mark, he wants to make a point. He's trying to tell us something. He's saying, this is important. And I think, I just want to give us three things that I think, at least three things that Mark is trying to say here. They're going to be up on the screen and we're going to kind of walk through each of them. Mark wants to show us through this story the destructive power of evil. Okay? Number two, he wants to show us how Jesus has that power, has power over that evil. And number three, he wants to show us what our response is. So, number one, the destructive power of evil. I cannot imagine someone who is in worse condition than this particular man that we just read in this story, right? This man is demon-possessed by a legion of unclean demons. And a legion is just, the Romans would use that term as kind of an army term. It could be up to 6,000 troops. So this man could have up to 6,000 demons within him. I cannot comprehend it. Can you? So basically, his life is hell. I mean, that's kind of the best that I could think about. His life is basically hell. He can't live in normal society. He's been cast out by others. It sounds like there have been people that have tried to help him in the past. And maybe when he was on a good day, they went out there and they tried to reason with him. They tried to talk with him. The text says that he was bound. He was chained, which sort of, as I read it, I'm like, whoa, who would do that? But you could look at a generous reading and say, hey, he's hurting other people. He's even hurting himself. And so they were trying to alleviate some of what was taking place. And so the townspeople tried to help him, but in his rage, in when the demons were able to possess him, he had supernatural strength to break free from these particular chains. And so it's a picture of a man who cannot be helped. He cries out night and day, night and day. There's no freedom for this man. And I think it's a picture of the destructive power of evil that's taking place. I would say the best word to describe this man would be tormented. And we don't know how he got into this state, right? The text does not say that he made some decisions to kind of fall in line with evil, and then evil kind of took over him. I mean, certainly that could happen, right? We know people where they kind of step over the line, they begin to live into not the ways of God, and then evil sort of takes a hold of them. That could certainly be the case, but it could also be the case for God knows why evil just took over this man. We think about the book of Job or something like that. But either way, I think it's a reminder, and Mark gives this to us because we need to take a hard look at the destructive power of evil in our lives. Because, friends, there are times when, for us, when evil happens, there are times when evil actually doesn't seem to look all that evil. Or in our culture, we often don't call out things that are going against the way of God, right? We find that in our culture now that the highest ethic is one of tolerance. And so in which you look at something as evil, or you look at something against the ways of God, but you can't actually call it that. So we're calling good things bad, bad things good. And Mark's saying, no, what evil is out there trying to do, it's trying to destroy you. So we can't call this thing good, whatever that might be. And the other thing is we can't say it's just harmless. It's just not a big deal. It won't have that much impact on me or my friends or this person or our society, that there actually are consequences for what is taking place. So he says, don't fool yourself. Evil is not harmless, right? So some examples. It might be gossip. Gossip is not just, spilling the tea or sharing a prayer request, right? Gossip is, thank you for laughing at that, it's slandering your fellow human being, right? Who is created in the image of God. It's not just speaking truth. Oh, I'm just talking politics, or I'm just talking about this or that, right? Abortion, not just family planning. Sexual immorality is not just sort of exploring or just having fun or living out your truth. It's we call it sin as a Christian community. And often the things that we think are less harmless are actually the most dangerous for us. And we invite them in, they begin to take a foothold. They begin to grow. And then we begin to get to the point where we hate our lives, as the text would say. And so what Mark's trying to say is let's just call evil for what it is, and let's say that it's out to destroy us. Whatever you might put in that category, that it's out to actually hurt us. It's not actually there to help us. So how do you destroy evil? What do you do? How do you destroy evil before it gets to you? And what Mark is basically telling us is that you actually can't do it. You actually cannot destroy evil, and we cannot destroy it. Now, you look at this man. He's got restraints. He's got external restraints, and he didn't need the townspeople to come in and help him anymore. That's not what he needed. He didn't need them to come and close up all the tombs so that he couldn't live in them. He didn't need them to give stronger chains, because none of those things would actually work for this man. No laws, no rules will ever stop. What this man needed was a deliverer. What he needed in our story is he needs a deliverer, someone who's going to give him a new heart. Someone who's going to give him a new spirit that's going to be able to free him from those things. He needs to be reborn, and you can't do that by yourself. You need Jesus to be able to do that. You know, we've all heard stories, and you guys probably know this better than I do, or statistics of people who grew up in the church, and then they go off to college and sort of take a 180, if you will. Right? They grew up in the church, they're part of the church, they feel like they're following after God, and then a week or a month or a year after kind of leaving home, there's sort of this transformation or this change, and they kind of give up their faith. Why is that? Why does that happen? This happened to my brother. And I love my brother. I pray for him. I enjoy spending time with him. But he was in the church. He was in youth group, and then he sort of had this college experience, if you will. We use stereotypes in that way. And then he's never kind of been back. So what happened? to him. I want to say this humbly, and I don't think it applies in every situation, but I think that for some people, it's like, okay, they were, quote unquote, they were following after Jesus. Now they're what some people would consider a bad person, but I wouldn't categorize as that, but they're just not living according to God's ways. Did some transformation happen? And I think it's not true in every case, but in many cases, you have to ask yourself, was that person's heart changed in the beginning? What was that person's heart change in the beginning? Or to use Mark's language, did the restraints just come off? Right? Did the restraints just come off? Right? Because that's what happens when we go off to college. Right? The restraints come off. Right? Our parents are not telling us what to do anymore. They're no longer rules from home. There's not things that are guarding us or restricting us. Right? The training wheels are off. And those things are no longer there to keep us in check. And so when the restraints come off, Mark, he calls it evil, and I don't know, that might be too strong of a word for an 18-year-old college student, but who we are, if you will, who we are, sort of the condition of our heart is unleashed when we're in those sorts of situations, right? As a youth, it's restrained, but at some point, the restraints always come off. And I use college as an example, but it could be anything. It could be, you know, what do you do when nobody's looking, right? What do you do when no one's watching or when you think that no one will find out, right? When the restraints are off, when the external factors are not there, what comes out of your life? What happens in your life? And what Mark says is the only way for anyone to get rid of that evil is to be delivered from it. Someone more powerful has to come. And so let's look. Number two, point number two, Jesus' power over that evil. Jesus steps out of the boat. The man, he immediately runs to Jesus. He's looking for Jesus. Why is he looking for Jesus? It's possible some scholars say that he actually saw the storm. Maybe he was hiding in the tombs from the storm. It immediately stopped. And so maybe he knew something supernatural was happening. He's got fear. He's got excitement. But also he's probably hating and hoping for this deliverance, right? Jesus steps out of the boat. The disciples do not. At least that's what the scriptures say. The scriptures never really talk too much about the disciples. So I imagine they were like, they saw this man who is possessed come, and they said, oh, Jesus, we'll go over here and we'll take care of, you know, the ropes of the boat, right? You go ahead and take care of this situation, and we'll meet you over in a few minutes. I'm not sure exactly what happened there, but it's interesting how if you look at the text, the demons understand who Jesus is, but the disciples still do not fully understand. But the demons say, what do you have to do with me? What do you have to do with me? And it's just another way of saying, why are you bringing this conflict? And the demons knew that Jesus was having an assault on evil. He was having, it was Jesus' presence, it was invading the evil in this man's life. And so this interaction takes place, and I mentioned it gets a little weird. The demons start using, you know, we or me. It's different language. I think it's like Gollum or something like that, you know, in Lord of the Rings. I mean, just this whatever language, not quite sure what to make of it all. Jesus sends them out into these pigs. They go down. Again, Mark doesn't tell us why. Mark doesn't tell us why all of this took place and what the importance of it is. But there is importance, scholars point out, there is importance about the fact that there were pigs in that particular area. Because for the Jewish people, pigs were unclean. You could not eat pigs, right? And so the whole story here is about uncleanliness. You've got the pigs who are unclean. You've got this man who's living in tombs. And Jewish law said if anyone that touched anything that was dead, they were unclean. He's filled with an unclean spirit. And then he's in Gentile territory. All the reasons to be, I mean, you could actually not think of a more unclean place. And yet, that's where Jesus shows up. Right? That's where Jesus went. He went there. He didn't wait for it to come to him. He went there, and he's going to make unclean things clean. He's going to make unclean things clean. And he does it with a word, right? The demons, they can't fight him. You know, like he calms the storm in the previous passage, he just does it with his words. You think about the Garden of Gethsemane, when he says, "Hey, Peter, put your sword down. I could call out 12 legions of angels and take care of this if I needed to, if that was God's will for my life." See, they all have to obey Jesus. And so, Haman, as you were just leading us and singing, it's the power of Jesus' word. Right? It's the power of the word of Jesus. His power is so astonishing that he came to bind the strong and take what he wants. But just don't miss that. What he wanted, friends, was for this man to be free. I mean, he literally went to all that work, went over the sea, calmed the storm, dealt with these demons, healed one man, and said, "I'm going to go home now." Right? You know, it's like, you know, you go on a trip. You just kind of like, you know, you go to Disney World or something, and you go to Magic Kingdom. You're like, well, we should also go to Epcot. We should also go here. Let's go hit Universal. No. That doesn't really make sense, and that was not in my notes. So, okay, whatever. You get the point, all right? I got to keep moving here. All right, number three, you get my point. Jesus, it was very impactful that he hit the one, okay? Number three, let's look at how a life freed by Jesus and how we're to respond to Jesus. Jesus delivers this man. He's looking sane. He's looking human. The Gospel of Luke tells us he's probably unclothed this entire time, and so it's been years. He's actually clothed now. He's in his right mind, and you would think the townspeople would respond positively. Wow, we've actually helped this man before. We couldn't help him, but now this guy Jesus came, and he helped them, and now we're celebrating. That's not what happens, right? It's like the story of the prodigal son, only it's not a parable. They respond poorly. They respond poorly. They do not see. All they can think about is the cost of what happened. No one rejoices, right? Jesus just took like much of their economy, 2,000 pigs, and just threw them off the cliff. And no apologies. He didn't say, "Oh, I'm sorry, I need to do this." And if Jesus was willing to do that for one, imagine what he was willing to do if he wanted to save others as well, right? They were counting the cost. And I think, I know we want to be harsh on the townspeople, but I think they knew something that if we would do well to remember today. And it's that when Jesus, with somebody with that much power and that much authority comes into your life, it's going to disrupt your life. It's going to disrupt aspects of your life. And so if you want Jesus to be around in your life, he's going to disrupt some things. Life is not going to be the same as you know it now. And if you think, at the same time, if you think that you do have Jesus in your life, but your life has not been disrupted, maybe you actually haven't had much of Jesus. Maybe he hasn't really been around. See, friends, make no mistake, if you want Jesus around, he's going to disrupt your finances. He's going to disrupt the way you use your time, your opinions about what is right and what is wrong. One commentator wrote about this. He said, he's going to disrupt our child idolatry, how we spend our entire lives revolved around our kids. So you cannot be close to someone with this type of power and not have your life unchanged. And I say this because I imagine there's some of us in the room today that we want to feel closer to Jesus. And we felt close to Jesus in the past. And we go to church and we do the things that we're supposed to do. But for some reason that, you know, that intimacy, that connection is just not there like it used to be. And I just want to throw out there a possibility that maybe it's because we've actually asked Jesus to leave one area of our life. You know, because we don't want him to disrupt something. So we're like, "Hey, Jesus, it's okay if you have this part of my life. It's okay if you have this. It's okay if you have that. But there's this thing over here. I'm just not quite sure I'm ready for you. So can you depart?" Because that's what they said, right? The townspeople said, "Will you depart?" They'd rather have a legion of demons in their home than the Savior of the world. And so for us, Jesus is saying, hey, he's going to disrupt some things. And we're saying, no, wait, you really want me to confess that to others? You really want me to give that away? You really want me to get up and speak and share that? You want me to do these things? And the temptation for us is to say, no, Jesus, depart. Leave. I can't do that. And it's not so much a challenge. I just want to encourage you, encourage myself. Don't do that. Don't do that in your life. See, this story could actually be seen as a story around the three begs that take place. You've got the demons who beg Jesus to go into the pigs, right? To not leave the region. And what does Jesus do? He says, okay, sure, you can do it. Then you've got the townspeople who beg Jesus to leave, and what does he do? He leaves. And then you've got this man who's been healed, and he says, Jesus, before you get on the boat, let me come with you. And again, I mentioned, it's the same language that's used when Jesus calls the disciples, that they might be with him. If you're Jesus, what are you doing? You're bringing them on the boat, right? You're bringing them on the boat. And Jesus says, nope, I'm not doing that. And I don't know how to make sense of that other than to say, that's just like Jesus being Jesus. You just can't control Jesus. Right, what we think Jesus would do, Jesus doesn't often do. You can't control him. But what he does do is he gives this man a mission. He gives him a mission, and he says, and this is the first time in Mark. If you've been reading along with us, Jesus says, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet. Don't tell anybody, don't tell anybody, don't tell anybody. And now he says, go tell. And this man, we consider him to kind of be the first missionary to the Gentile people. The first missionary to the Gentiles. He's in the Gentile territory and he says, I want you to tell everybody what you did for me. And he entrusted this man, right? A new convert, somebody who had been demon-possessed, no training, no knowledge, no group. Later on, Jesus will send the 72 out two by two. Doesn't do it here. He just tells this man, hey, you've been healed, go. That's all you need, right? That's all you need. He's armed with this message. We've talked about it the last couple of weeks, about the seed that is sown. It's not about us as a church who sow the seed. It's about the seed. It's about the gospel. And so, guys, you have everything you need to share your faith. I guess I would caveat that to say, you need more of Jesus. Right? If you've been transformed by Jesus, if you've been changed by Jesus, if you've been delivered by Jesus in your life, then you have all you need to share your faith. If you don't have that, that's where you need. But you don't need all the other stuff. We don't need another book or another seminar, another this or another that. Right? We just need Jesus in that way. I'm going to close here, but the and Haman, why don't you come up and play so that way I'll stop talking. But it's the real deal here, guys, all right? Later on, right, I mentioned Jesus is leaving this region. He's going to come back into this region, and he's not going to be greeted by a man who's possessed by demons. That's only one man, too. He's actually greeted by thousands of people, the text will tell us. How did those people hear about Jesus? How did those people hear about Jesus if not from this one man? Let me sum it up this way. Mark, why did he record this story for us? I think he wants us to see the power in the relentless pursuit of Jesus to come and deliver us. Hell itself, and there's a lot of hell in this passage, hell itself cannot stop Jesus from coming to deliver us. And if Jesus can deliver this man, he can deliver each and every one of us. Whatever it is, whatever that thing is in our lives that we're wrestling with, that we're struggling with, not only Jesus can, but Jesus wants to. He's willing to take his other followers, put them on a boat, risk their life on a storm, sleep while he's there, calm the storm, and come to save you, to deliver you, and then get back on the boat and go home. And so whatever it is you're wrestling with, Jesus has the power and he wants to deliver you. I want us to just close our eyes. And just right now, tell Jesus, if there's something that you feel like has been binding you, has been holding you back, call it whatever you will, evil, sin, a secret. Would you just tell Jesus, Lord, I don't want this to control me anymore. I don't want this to hold me. I don't want to be bound. Just give it to him. And just imagine now, imagine you standing on the shore of wherever, and imagine Jesus coming on a boat. And imagine you running up to him, falling on your face, and crying out, Jesus, save me. Father, forgive me. And imagine instead of a word of rebuke, a word of shame, imagine a word of, my daughter, my son, I came here just for you. I came here to break free what has kept you in chains. And now picture yourself standing up and embracing Jesus, hugging Jesus. The physical embrace. Jesus saying, I love you. You're free. No longer bound. I have the authority. I spoke it over you. And I want you now, I'm commissioning you to live out into this, to go share your story with others. Jesus, we thank you. We thank you for your authority. And right now, Lord, we want to stand and we want to proclaim that authority one more time before we leave today.